Now we'll go on with considering another phrase that we find in the third chapter of Philippians, which also in the King James Version is translated to worship God in spirit. It's the only other phrase similar to that one in John that we're considering as the subject of our lessons this week, which is to worship God in spirit, or worshiping God in spirit. And also in the third chapter of Philippians, in the third verse, we find a similar phrase. Philippians 3:3. Will somebody read that? Sister Ollie, would you read that for us? All right. We are the circumcision which worship God in spirit, as it reads in the King James. However, commentators such as Bullinger, you'll notice, Brother Hardy, and there's a note also in the Revised Standard Version which points out that this phrase can also be rendered worship by the Spirit of God. Worship by the Spirit of God. To worship by the Spirit of God. That is, we worship, we who are of the circumcision, the true circumcision, we worship by this renewed mind, by this Spirit, by this renewed mind that we've been talking about yesterday. This renewed mind that forms as a result of this reciprocal relationship, this sympathy that exists between our mind, the new mind, and the mind of God. This mind that was kindled by God and which is led of the Spirit of God. Remember the quotation from 8th of Romans. You are sons of God if you are led by the Spirit of God. So this mind that was kindled by God and which is led by the Spirit of God worships God. Those who are of the true circumcision worship by this Spirit of God. The 20th century translation of this, Philippians 3:3, is as follows. For we are really the circumcised, we whose worship is prompted by the Spirit of God, who exult in Jesus Christ and do not rely on external privilege. Now Paul, in this chapter, is making a contrast. He's contrasting those who worship by the Spirit with those who have confidence in their fleshly descent from Abraham, those who are interested in this external relationship, those who place their confidence in fleshly descent. So Paul is contrasting that element with those who worship by the Spirit, those who worship with this mind, with this attitude of Christ, with this reciprocal sympathy that they have with God. So the true circumcision, as this verse teaches, is not an outward one, but true circumcision is a mental one. It's putting not our trust in fleshly things, but rather in our trust in God. Just as Paul is teaching that outward circumcision cannot affect our salvation, so also the corollary or the antitype of it can affect our salvation, namely the circumcision of the mind. Remember, Moses talks about it. Let's look at Deuteronomy 10:10, what circumcision was to actually portray to them. I'm sorry, it's Deuteronomy 10:16. Somebody read that. Sister Starrett, would you read that for us? Deuteronomy 10:16. All right. Circumcise the foreskin of your heart is the idea that circumcision was to convey. And, of course, Paul in the second chapter of Romans also mentions what it should be. Let's look at that. Romans 2, 28 and 29. Second chapter of Romans, verses 28 and 29. Brother Dave, you want to read that for us?
But he is not a Jew which is one out of them. He experience that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that is not act, in the spirit and not in the letter, which praise is not of man, but of God.
All right. So with that, with those scriptures, I think we can say and have another very good definition for worship in spirit. Worshiping in spirit is to be spiritually circumcised. According to Paul's definition here in the second chapter of Romans. To be spiritually circumcised, worshiping God in spirit. Now, I think this is a very fitting definition, since it defines Christ's words of worshiping God in spirit. It defines this in terms of the law of Moses. And this, after all, was the subject between Christ and this woman at the well in the fourth chapter of John, which we're considering. Remember, they had been discussing the proper place of worship and the mode of worship. Ye worship, you know not what, Jesus said. But she claimed that she knew what she worshiped. They worshiped the fathers in the same way the fathers did, supposedly. But Jesus says, the hour comes and now is when true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. Let's look at it again. The fourth chapter of John, the 23rd verse. Actually, in the 20th verse, we read, the woman said, our fathers worshipped in the mountains. And you say, in Jerusalem is the place that men ought to worship. So there was a difference of opinion here, where she wasn't sure in her mind where the proper place was to worship. And Jesus was pointing out here in his answer, and I think this, again, the background is important, as Ted indicates in his class. We have to have a certain amount of background before we can understand a particular text. And the background here is that Jesus is trying to teach that the time for all this detail, the time and the place, is no longer important. The thing that's important is that God will be worshipped in individual human hearts. And the place, the means, the method, all these things are no longer to be important, as they indeed were under the law. So here he says in the 23rd verse, the hour cometh and now is when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth, rather than the true worshipers worshiping at Jerusalem at the day of Passover and at the Feast of Tabernacles and so forth. The day will come, and it was to come very soon after the veil of the temple was rent. Well, still on this verse, to go off a little bit from this matter of spirit, we should perhaps spend a few minutes on discussing what this word true means. It says, who are the true worshipers here? It says, a time will come when the true worshipers will worship in spirit and truth. Who are the true worshipers? Not in this case. Yes, that's right. That's what it said. In line with what Ted suggested, though, the word true has two meanings. One is opposite of false. And the other meaning is real, as opposed to symbolic or typical. And this happens to be the meaning here. True worshipers here are the real worshipers. The Greek word here for true, and it's not important what it is in contrast with shadow or type. Now let's look at a few other examples here in John. Let's look at John 1:6. I'll read that for us, Ted. Yes. Only thing, I must have the wrong reference there. No. Let's just skip it, rather than me trying to find it. try 632. 1:9. Yeah, that's it.
1:9.
All right. Apostle here, John, is obviously not talking about the fact, or contrasting the fact, that there's a false light. There's no such thing as a false light, really. He is saying that this was the true light, which was the antitype of all that light stood for. Won't labor that unless somebody's got some question on it. Let's look also at John 6:32. Somebody want to read that, Margaret? All right, the contrast here is again between what? Anyone? All right, between the symbolic and the real. The symbolic being what, Olin? What was the symbolic bread? Not, I don't think in this case. The one Moses gave him. The manna, right. The manna was a symbolic bread, which of course showed in symbol that God would provide the bread of heaven on which we feed, as it says in our hymn, which was Christ. Christ says, I am the true bread. The word, again, being the same as in that fourth chapter of John we're concerned about. True as being real, as opposed to symbolic. Let's also turn to the 15th chapter of John. First verse. Nancy, you want to read that for us? John 15:1. All right, I am the true vine. Obviously the same usage. Hebrews 8:2, another one. Brother Austin, you want to read that? Hebrews 8:2. All right, the true tabernacle, which is what, Dad? What's a true tabernacle? The what? I think you're right. Agree with that, Ted? The body of worshipers in Christ, the church, which the Lord pitched, not man. Think about that. We can argue about it later today. All right, one other reference while we're right here in Hebrews, the 9th chapter of Hebrews, the 24th verse, to illustrate, again, the use of the word true. Christ has not entered into the holy place with hands, which are figures of the true, but into heaven itself. Obviously not talking about the opposite of false, but talking about the types of the law, the symbols, and these being the realizations of them, the antitypes. So this is what the word true means also here in the 4th chapter of John. Says the time will come when the true worshipers shall worship in spirit and truth. The worshipers in the past were mostly form worshipers. They worshipped outward things. They came to Jerusalem as a matter of custom, or to be part of the program, part of the festivity. But Jesus is saying these are not the real worshipers. They are only a type of the true or the real worshipers. As was discussed the other night in the lecture, there's a number of types under the law. The Israelite had a type to show him what he should be, and what was that? Who among the Israelites showed him what he should be? Anybody remember? Perhaps the question isn't worded too well. I was thinking of the priest. The priest showed the Israelite what he should be, and who showed him what he really was? What type? The leper. All right. So also, these worshipers which plotted to Jerusalem each year were for most part not the true or the real worshipers, but they represented those. They were types of those who throughout the ages have prayed for the peace of Jerusalem. So Jesus says the hour is coming and now is when the types of the law, the worshipers who are just coming for the outward form of the feast, this is just this time is soon to be at an end. No longer need these people who just come for the festivities. From now on, it's no longer circumcision that counts, no longer the details, no longer going to Jerusalem three times a year. No longer is it the city that's important, which you would remember the woman was concerned. Is it important to worship at Jerusalem? Because the Samaritans, of course, couldn't worship at Jerusalem. The Jews wouldn't have them. So she was concerned whether it was important to worship at that particular mount. And Jesus says, the time is coming, and now is, when is it not going to be important? But rather, the thing that's going to be important is those who worship in spirit and in truth, regardless of the time or the location. So this might be a good time for our self-examination break again. What's in this for us? Well, ask brother and sister ego again at this point. Something like, did I come to Bible school? Why? For festivity? Do I plod like the children of Israel did each year, a certain number of times? Do I plod to meeting each Sunday morning with my head in a spiritual vacuum, just like the children of Israel did? These are questions we might ask ourselves. There's another interesting point in this fourth chapter of John, the 23rd verse, where it says that true worshipers will worship God in spirit and in truth. Now, Ted, you want to guess again what this word truth means? Well, this time I think you'd be right. The word truth here is a different Greek word, a different stem than the other word, where it says the true worshipers shall worship in spirit and truth. That word, we said, meant real. In this case, worship God in truth this is opposite to false.